Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
There is a war underway in Mexico. More people were killed in Mexico in 2008 than were killed in Iraq. It is grossly undercovered by the American media. It is on our border. It has the potential to extend into our countryside. It's a very serious problem.
More people killed in Mexico in 2008 than killed in Iraq. That was former House Speaker Newt Gingrich on ABC This Week with George Stephanopoulos a couple of weeks ago, talking about what he called a direct civil war along the Mexico-U.S. border between the drug cartels and the Mexican government. In the last 2 years, almost 7,000 people have been killed along that border. The violence has spiked, especially in the last few months, we're told. And to help us understand what's going on and the implications for the United States, we're joined by two longtime reporters who've been covering both sides of the San Diego-Tijuana border, Amy Isaacson, the border reporter for KPBS, the NPR affiliate in San Diego, and Vicente Calderon, editor of the Tijuana Press. Welcome to WNYC, both of you. Hello from New York.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Amy, what's been going on the last couple of years that's caused the violence to spike along the border?
Well, what we're seeing now is a historic kind of reorganization of the cartels in Mexico and especially here along the San Diego-Tijuana border. The Arellano-Felix cartel has been the dominant cartel here in Tijuana. Over the past couple of years, the Mexican authorities and U.S. authorities have arrested some high-ranking members. This has created vacuums within the cartel. They are amazing at readjusting. However, in this readjustment process, I think other cartels have seen an opening and tried to take advantage of that. And so that's what we're seeing here on the border in Tijuana now. The spike in violence here began at the end of September. There was the quick version is that there's a man called El Teo who works for the Arellano-Felix cartel. He was a high-ranking lieutenant. And he, at the end of the summer, or sorry, last spring in April, was getting out of control. And he was killing and kidnapping where the leader of the Arellano-Felix cartel didn't want him to. The leader told him, cool it. And this man, El Teo, didn't. And this resulted in a big shootout in the middle of the streets in Tijuana in April. And El Teo escaped the shootout, but he had a price on his head, and he went to Sinaloa. Now, Sinaloa is the home of Chapo Guzman, who is probably the most wanted drug trafficker, one of the most powerful drug traffickers in all of Mexico right now. El Teo, apparently, this is the story that Mexican authorities tell, made an alliance with Chapo Guzman and has now come back to Tijuana at the end of September and just has gone on this killing spree to help Chapo Guzman take over. And since the end of September, there's been more than 450 people killed in Tijuana, and I think last year's total was a record 844 murders in Tijuana.
Wow. Vicente, would you characterize this the way Newt Gingrich did, as a direct civil war between the drug cartels and the Mexican government?
No, I think that's a little bit of a stretch, but it is a very concerning period of time, and the amount of killing, it's worrying for many of the sectors of the city, of the society. This is a problem that it's playing all along in Mexico, but focused in very specific cities, like the one with a historic and important role on the trafficking of drugs towards the United States. You have cities like Tijuana, but also it's happening in Ciudad Juarez, across from El Paso, Texas, and also in Sinaloa, the state on the Pacific coastline, who has been the cradle of drug trafficking in Mexico. It is a very difficult situation, but most of these killings has been done among people who is involved somehow with the drug trade. And even when there's some innocent bystanders being killed between these rival factions shooting at each other in the middle of the streets, it's very much focusing between or inside these two different organizations.
I think that the characterization of civil war is more between the drug cartels rather than the drug cartels and the government. Mm-hmm. There was a report that came out by the U.S. Joint Forces Command that named Mexico as one of the two countries that, and I'm reading here, quote, bear consideration for a rapid and sudden collapse. I think that this report was picked up a lot by the media, by politicians, and they started discussing the threat of civil war within Mexico between cartels and the government, and this war then spilling over to the United States. And this report, it bears stating, was completely speculative. Mm-hmm. That's what the role of the report was, to kind of have this, you know, many-year vision of what could happen. But I think that this was picked up on more as fact by media and by various people within the government.
Oh, that's really useful for our listeners that you cleared that up. But the situation obviously has some implications for immigration and for the economies of both sides of the border as they exist. It is the most active international border in the world. And here's a clip from a piece that you, Amy, filed last week for KPBS, in which you're talking to an immigration lawyer about a client applying for asylum because he didn't want to go back to this violence in Mexico.
Whether the people are wealthy or not, there's a perception that somebody coming from the U.S. either is bringing money with them, or that they would be people who still have strong connections to the U.S. so that they would be good kidnapping targets because they would have friends and family who are still left behind in the U.S. And being recent arrivals, those connections would be fresh, and they could tap into their connections in the U.S. to get ransom money.
So, Amy, explain the implications of that if people with connections to the U.S., real or perceived, are bigger kidnapping targets.
This man that Ginger Jacobs, who's an immigration attorney here in San Diego, was referring to, actually wasn't applying for asylum here in the U.S., though asylum claims by Mexican citizens at San Diego border crossings have doubled last year as compared to the year before. This man was actually facing deportation. He had picked avocados in the northern part of San Diego County for 20 years. Somehow he ran into immigration officials and they were threatening to deport him to Mexico. Now, he hadn't been there in 20 years. He has a family here on this side of the border. He has two U.S. citizen daughters who the attorney described to me are texting addicts or on MySpace and Facebook all the time, kind of typical American teenagers. And this man was talking to his family, and they live in Michoacan. That's where he came from. And Michoacan is a state in Mexico that's been more, it's seen a lot more drug violence in the last four or five years or so. And his family was telling him, do not come home. You are going to be a target for kidnappers, because the perception is that if you're coming from the U.S., even if you've been picking avocados for 20 years, which here that wouldn't be considered a great salary, but in Mexico, the thought is that you have money, and that makes you a target. This man was talking about how his daughters want to, I believe one wants to go to nursing school, the other also wants to go on to some kind of advanced degree, and he was talking about how there's no school for them in Michoacan, in the village they come from. But if he sent them to a private school, that would also make them targets for kidnapping. And the other perception is that even if you don't necessarily have money, you have friends and family in the U.S. who do. So kidnappers can kidnap you, and you're going to have those fresh contacts mm-hmm. back in the United States that you can mine for ransom money.
Vicente Calderon, editor of the Tijuana Press, what's the debate like over how much of the remedy for this comes from Mexico and how much of the remedy for this needs to come from the United States? Because a lot of this has to do with U.S. demand for drugs, a $1 billion industry, doesn't it?
Yes. There's a stronger talking in the Mexican side about that, especially, for example, if you notice that the 95% of the weapons that are found in Mexico and related to all this killing are coming from the U.S. Mexico doesn't, you cannot get legally a gun or an AK-47, which are very common by now in Mexico, there, but you can get it from across the border from the U.S. And also, at the end of bottom line, this is fueled by the, as you were saying, but all the millions of dollars made of these drug traffickers selling these drugs on the U.S. We have to take on consideration that the possibility for them to move all these drugs through Mexico it's fueled by also the corruption of the Mexican government. So I think they are this administration, the President Felipe Calderón administration, is understanding that they need to pressure the U.S., but they need the help from the U.S. to be able to face this huge challenge, because the power that these organizations are now showing has been growing from the last 20 years, and now they operate with the level of impunity and infiltration on the Mexican institution. That's the main reason why, even with all the soldiers and federal agents displayed along the most important cities with this problem in Mexico, they haven't been able to do much of a dent on the infrastructure of these four major drug trafficking organizations.
Hang on one second, Amy. I want to take a phone call as we talk about the rising tide of drug violence along the Mexico-U.S. border and the San Diego-Tijuana area on the Mexico side, talking about it with Vicente Calderon, editor of the Tijuana Press, and Amy Isaacson, the border reporter for KPBS, the NPR affiliate in San Diego, and Arthur in Manhattan. You're on WNYC. Hello, Arthur.
Thank you, Brian. I happen to be familiar with some areas of New York City that had extremely intensive drug traffic many years ago. And as a result of that experience, I can think of nothing better than drug traffickers killing each other. The government has been notoriously ineffective, not merely in Mexico, but in the United States, in dealing with this. And to the extent that, obviously, I don't approve of kidnapping or innocent bystanders being injured or kidnapped or whatever, but to the extent that the violence is between the drug gangs, I say, here, let it go on. And I favor it tremendously. I see no reason to call it a civil war or be concerned about it. I think it's a very positive thing.
Well, Arthur being honest, if nothing else, about the value of lives of drug dealers as he sees them. Vicente, do other people in Mexico feel that way? And what about...
Yes.
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, that was the argument for many years from the government to the citizens. Hey, they are killing each other. Don't worry, just go on with your lives. This is a problem contained within the infrastructure of the drug organizations, and it's kind of a self-cleaning system. But what we saw is that they reached this level of impunity by now, that in the process of they conducting their quote-unquote business, there's a lot of people being killed or injured or displaced from the cities because the level of impunity that they achieve. And this became like a state within a state. There's the legal institutions and the way the law is conducted, but there's another group or life or reality with a different rules of the law. And they kill each other when you don't pay your debts. They kill each other when somebody's trying to betray your bosses and trying to climb up the ladder of the hierarchy of the drug organizations. That's very dangerous. I think to see that is very dangerous. And this is not just a Mexican problem. I just remember that in the threat assessment of the U.S. in 2009, they, for example, said that these organizations are linking with organized crime groups that operate in the U.S. from a long time, like the Italian mafia or the Dominican Republic gangs that are operating in the east side of the country, on the United States.
Jim in Union City, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jim.
Hi. I was just wondering if the appetite in the United States can't be stemmed, if decriminalization would be a disincentive to the criminal activity, or is that naive?
Amy, if people are dying more from the drug war than they are dying from the drugs, then maybe the humane thing to do is decriminalize the drugs. I don't know if we accept the premise, though.
I think that there's been a lot of discussion. It's actually surprised me the amount of discussion that there is in Mexico about legalizing drugs, both on an official government level, talking about legalizing some drugs and some small quantities of drugs, but also talking to people in Tijuana, people that you would never expect, older people. I remember talking to this 70-year-old accountant at a peace march, and he was telling me, well, they should just legalize it. So I think that there is the thought that that would take the power out of drug trafficking organizations. Whether in practice that's true, that's not clear. I think that also really in the U.S. side, looking at the demand, in addressing demand with the federal budget, using the federal budget to do things like treatment and prevention, and more than this interdiction at the border crossings, and more than trying to eradicate marijuana and coca in Colombia, that instead of focusing on that as much in the federal budget, focusing domestically on demand, if you cut down on demand, you're going to cut down on the market, which means there's not as many drugs need to come across the border.
And we're just about out of time, but Vicente Calderon, last question. Out of the estimated 7,000 people killed in this drug violence along the border over the last 2 years, 24 have been journalists. 7 more journalists have vanished. How safe do you feel covering this story?
I don't feel safe. I have to be very careful. I'm able to roam around and get some information, but you have to use double caution because you never know who you are dealing with. We at TijuanaPress.com were facing several problems of the level of impunity because, you need to be cautious with the people in general, but also with the police. And recently, they left a note on our website saying that they just decapitated 3 guys and they left it on the streets, so the police were about to find them. We were checking around. Nobody knew about those cases. And next morning, we realized that was a true message, and obviously these guys who left the message on the commentary section of our website knew or had something to do with the killing, and that put us in a more delicate situation. The only thing that you have to do or can do is just basically pray and try to be more balanced, so you don't see as somebody working as a spokesperson for any of the drug cartels or the government.
Go ahead, Amy.
I was just going to say there's the idea of practicing really strong, good journalism as well. And I think that has to be even more the case when you're covering drug cartels in Tijuana, that you need to make sure that your stories are sourced from 2 or 3 sources, that you're not reporting on gossip. And I think if you exercise, hopefully this isn't too idealistic, but if you exercise good journalism, that offers you some layer of protection.
Amy Isaacson, border reporter for KPBS, the NPR affiliate in San Diego, and Vicente Calderon, editor of the Tijuana Press, collaborating on a project called Border Battle, where they're tracking the violence on interactive maps and will continue to document this story. We have linked to their project visuals on our site. Thanks so much again for joining us, and you can see that at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Good luck to both of you.
Thank you, and gracias.
Thank you very much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Now it's time for your top 5 things the Obama administration should do for New York. 212-433-WNYC, or keep posting them to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show.